thank you very much, Victoria and Callie, and it is great to see you guys. It's my favorite gals. You know, it's unusual in AA these days to find a bunch of people in one meeting with over 30 years, and it's great to see them here. And it's wonderful to be here. This is one of my favorite steps, this and the seventh step. They call them actually old-timer steps, you know, and I think I know why. I have a feeling I know what that's all about. I think I started maybe actually getting them a little bit, maybe at 15 to 20 years or something, and they're important. And I have a message that I want to talk. I don't know, did I say I'm Russell? I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, and I really, you know, I pray that I'm able to deliver whatever message I'm supposed to deliver today. Now, whether you're able to accept it or receive it, I don't know. That's between you and God and whatever's going on in your life. And I know I received a lot of messages as I was going through this thing from people that ended up to be absolutely true that I didn't accept or incorporate into my life until many years later. Because the messages of life, you know, Moses, when he was talking to the Israelites, he says, I label in Deuteronomy, if you happen to be reading that one today, he says, because these things have been old, these principles, what we're talking about, been around for a long time. He says, I give you blessings and curses. I give you life and death. He says, choose life. He says, if you do what I tell you to do, he says, you're choosing life. You don't do it, you're choosing death. You know, in the Sermon on the Mount, which is one of the books I was given when I came in here, not that I understood it by Emmett Fox, but it really is a dissertation on the Sermon on the Mount, which was one of the books in the first 4 years. Now, this is the history of AA. You're entitled to your opinion, you're not entitled to your facts. The fact is, for the first 4 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, before they wrote the big book, that book that says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, before they said, you do what we did, you'll get what we got, there was no big book, so they didn't read the big book during the first 4 years. So in order to know what their path is, you have to understand that the path was not reading the big book. I'm not deprecating the big book, this is just a fact. So when you follow their path, one of the paths they said in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers is that they found three books, the founders found three books absolutely essential. Not just essential, absolutely essential. One of the books was Sermon on the Mount, which is three chapters of Matthew, 5, 6, and 7. One of the books was 1 Corinthians 13, and the last book was the book of James, which was also called the James Club. So I guess theoretically, if we're listening to what they say, if you thoroughly follow their path, those are three books that you ought to read and study. You know, I'm not telling you to read the Bible. That's what they're telling you their experience is. So you do whatever you want to do, okay? I guess it has to do with, now listen to this word, I guess it has to do with surrender. I guess it has to do with a word called surrender and discipline. And not doing your will, doing God, doing things you don't want to do. I guess it has to do with doing stuff even though you don't want to do it. And I guess it has something to do with open-mindedness. Well, I read that somewhere. It has something to do with one of the steps. Bill Wilson had two guiding spirits that were behind him in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of them was a guy named Ed Dowling, who was a Jesuit priest. The other was Sam Shoemaker, who was a minister. I think he was Episcopalian. Calvary Chapel, Calvary Church, and he in New York, and he was his pastor, and he was one of the founders in the United States of something called the Oxford Group. The Oxford Movement was an evangelical Christian movement, sort of like out of England. It was started by a guy named Frank Buckman. And so AA has serious biblical roots, whether you want to believe that or not, it's true. And just like Moses said, choose life or choose death. In Sermon on the Mount, the last two paragraphs, when Jesus is given his sermon, which is the only long sermon in the Bible, he talks about building your house on a rock. He says, as opposed to building your house on sand. He says, I liken a man who hears my words and doesn't do them as to a man who builds his house on sand. And the wind comes and the rain comes and the house falls because it was built on sand. He likens him to a foolish man. But he says he likens the person who hears the words that I've just said in the sermon and does the words as to a wise man, because the rain came and the wind blows. Same rain, same wind, but the house stood because it was built on a rock. So the bottom line is in the end, because this ain't a dress rehearsal, you're gonna find out whether you're building your house on rock or whether you're building it on sand. And it's going to have to do with whether or not you're disciplined and whether you obey things that alcoholics, oh boy, don't you hate them? Isn't that horrible? Rules, obedience, you know, stuff like that. Rules, follow the rules, do stuff you don't want to do. Isn't that, that's the kind of stuff like, you know who does crap like that? Adults. Screw that shit. The hell with that crap, you know what I mean? I'm defying alcoholic. I'm going to do it my way, you know, Invictus. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole. I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstances, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Out of the bludgeoning of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears, there looms but horror of the shade, and yet the years shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charred with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Play a few more bars of I Did It My Way. Like to kill me. That crap like to kill me. Maybe that's good for normal people. I like it though, you know? You know why? Because you know what it means? It means I'm God and I'm in charge. In a program where it says, first of all, we have to quit playing God. See, I like the I'm God thing. I'm the master of my case. I'm the captain of my soul. You know, unless I have diarrhea. I mean, I'll tell you something. You get to be 64 years old. 64 years old. You know you ain't the master of your face. You know you're not the captain of your soul. You know the only control you have over this thing is whether you give it all to God and you surrender, or you decide that you're going to be swimming upstream. And I'm going to tell you, the message I'm going to give you today is my message based upon my life in the last 32 years in AA. It's not something I read at, listen, it's in the book. It's scriptural. I believe it's scriptural. And I'm going to tell you about my life and what's happened to me and what's going on with me. And I believe it's scriptural. I'm going to read the book. I believe it tracks the book. I believe it tracks their experience. You can test it. You can read the book. And you can see whether or not it makes sense in terms of AA standards. I think in many respects, AA has gotten away from a lot of this stuff. Not because AA is bad, because AA is made up of, ready for this? Alcoholics. Here's what they did. They took a perfectly good program and they populated the rules with alcoholics. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I refer to it as Well People's Anonymous, okay? So you can either believe the book and what they say in the book, or you can believe, I'll call it the wisdom of the rooms. The wisdom of the rooms, you see, the book says there's got to be absolute surrender. Absolute surrender. That means humbling yourself. All these steps are about humbling. It's all about becoming humble. Each step, even it says in the steps, all these steps humble you. You know, more humility is needed. And I don't know anything about humility because I'm an arrogant son of a gun on my best day. That's my default position. You come in here. Why do you come in here? Because you're humiliated. Somehow, some way, you've been humiliated to come in here. In the old days, you used to have to go up to the room in the Williamson's house and get down on your knees or in the hospital, give your life to the Lord, and, you know, give your life to... Hey, listen, they handled that third step right off the bat. I mean, I'm just telling you, that's what happened. Right off the bat, you didn't get into meetings. How would you like that deal? You couldn't get in the door unless you had gone on your knees in the hospital or up in the Williamson's house. Now, you may think that's a deal breaker, and maybe it is. That's a real separation, I would say, but I'll tell you, it's a qualifier, all right. Not a lot of guys saying, well, I don't believe in God, and he says, I'm not going to say the Lord's Prayer. I mean, hey, listen, this is really good. You could either die out there, it's nice to know you, we love you, or you can get down on your knees. It's a qualifier. You got to believe those meetings were probably a little more serious than some of the meetings you have going, you know, there must have been a little bit more seriousness to it. These guys took this thing seriously. Now, we don't do that today. We're just nicer because our human nature, and of course we think it's good, because we love people and we want people to love us. We don't want anybody going out of here with bad feelings. Can you imagine? I want you to imagine this. You got alcoholics who are childish in the extremes, want things their way, you know, rebel if you tell them anything, do not want to obey, and what we want to do is we want to cater to them and their feelings, and the last thing we want is to hurt their feelings. So what we'll do is we're going to change the program of recovery so that they're not ticked off. We don't want, because, you know, if they leave, then they'll think badly of us. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm an alcoholic. I don't want anybody to be thinking badly of me because, you know, I'll stay up at night, 3 o'clock in the morning, thinking, you know, why isn't my sponsee calling me, you know? Why did she do that step? Because I'm a codependent, because I have unhealthy dependencies, because I spend my whole life worrying about what other people think about me, which, by the way, is the real alcoholism. It centers in your mind, not your body. The drinking is but a symptom of the disease, a disease that tells you you're selfish, you're self-centered in the extreme. You're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. You step on the toes of others, they retaliate. Your self will run riot. They use it above everything. You must get rid of this selfishness, thinking about yourself all the time and why people are like that and why these things are happening to you. You know, that selfishness will kill you. It kills you. Above all, we got to get rid of it. God makes that possible. God's the solution to all this deal. You know, so and that's who we have to surrender to. That's where the surrender is. The greater the surrender, the greater gifts. There's consequences of not surrendering. So now we have this wonderful fellowship where we don't get down. We don't have them get down on knees anymore. We have some, you know, every step along the way, you know, let me tell you something. Taking the third step, get down on your knees. There's it was humiliating for me. I went in the bathroom. I was went in the bathroom, locked the door just in case somebody would walk in on me and see me praying. Because you know why? It's humiliating. You know, alcoholics needed to be humiliated. That's part of the process. We'd never do it unless, you know. You know what the fourth step is? Writing down all your stuff, following directions, all the crap that you did. It's, to a certain extent, humiliating. It's not as humiliating as getting arrested for DUI, but it's humiliating. Going up to a sponsor. Hey, how about this? Even asking somebody for help. Asking somebody to be your sponsor is, to a certain extent, humiliating. It requires some form of surrender. You have to voluntarily go up to somebody and say, will you help me? That's humiliating. You know something? The sixth step is humiliating. The seventh step, where we humbly ask, that's humiliating. The eighth step and the ninth step, going up to people and making amends and saying, I screwed up and I was wrong, it's humiliating. You know something? To a certain extent, even the 12th step is to a certain extent, you know, getting up here in front of a group of people and talking and risking that you might say something or do it, that's a little bit, you know, it's all about gaining humility. Something, I don't know about you, something I don't have, I have no acquaintance with. You know, I don't wake up in the morning and say, oh, you know, I think I'll be humble today. I don't know what that's all about. You know, what did Dr. Thibault say? It says what we need is constant, repeated, so what is it? Ego puncturing in death. Ego puncturing doesn't feel good, which is why in the seventh step it says we learn the value of suffering. You know, so the real A is pain, but we don't like pain. You know, that's why we drink. I don't like pain. That's why I drink. That's why I take drugs. That's why when I go to the doctor, I take no. We don't like pain. So we don't like pain. We don't, and it's painful. So we do our form of surrender. This is our form of surrender now in the modern AA times. And we think we're helping people. What we do is we lift up a white chip in a room and say, anybody wants, you know, what they have. This is what I had to do. I had to walk in front of a group of 50 people at the South Day group, and I had to pick up a white chip. You know, it's almost like, ready for this? It's almost like you're telling them like you need help. Can you believe that? I'm a trial attorney. I'm going to tell people like I need help, like you're new and you need help. You know what that is? You know what that is? That's humiliating. You know what that is? It's like getting down on your knees. You're ready. You know what's amazing? There are people that do that. And when somebody does that, everybody's excited because they know that's the first step. You know what I see in AA now? And you know why it's important? Because surrender is important. Humiliation and humility is important. You know, discipline is important. But sometimes you'll see somebody, you ever see that somebody do this in a room? Well, if you're shy,
yeah.
I'll put it up here, and after the meeting is done, you can sneak up and you can grab it.
Yeah.
And so you won't have to go through that process. Why don't you just tell him, why don't you just buy him a drink? Just buy him a drink. They're not staying for long. I mean, if they can't, it says if you're willing to go to any length, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length, then you're ready to take the steps. So they're not even ready to walk across the room and pick up a white chip, and then you're going to talk to them, okay, when we're going to do step two? When are we going to do step three? Why don't you just, you know, if you really want to kill somebody, and why? You know why we do that? You think we do that to help people. The reason we do that, quite frankly, you know, our motives are always mixed, is because we're just so codependent. We're just people whores. We're people whores. Yeah, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. Let me tell you something. We are so about people liking us and walking away and saying, you know, I'm at this room. They're so nice. We're so not about. He says, you know, I heard that guy Russell. What an idiot. You know, I hate that guy. I've had more people say, you know, I used to hate you, but now I love you. You know, when people hate you, what they're, and you're telling them the truth. And if you tell people the truth, and if you spout the truth, they will hate you, okay? Jesus knew that when he said, don't worry about it when they say all sorts of names to you, call you all sorts of names. They did the same thing with the prophets. When you're telling people stuff that's the truth, if they're alcoholic, you know, you're gonna hurt their feelings. You're gonna hurt their feelings. I'm gonna tell you that right now. But here's the good news: when they walk out with a resentment, what that means is that they heard you. They're thinking about you. They don't think about the person that they don't. They think about the person they have the resentment against. And you know what happens is they either drink over the resentment, because that's what we do, or they somehow fourth step it and fifth step it and talk to the sponsor and they pray, and they start realizing that whenever they're disturbed, what's the spiritual axiom, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. They realize what's wrong with them, and somehow, in some way, they understand that, you want to know something, that guy was right. He may still be an idiot, but you know something, he was right. And all of a sudden, we learn something about ourselves, and something changes, and all of a sudden, Russell doesn't bother me anymore when he said that, because he was right. And then we find out that a whole other group of people out there that used to bother us don't bother us anymore, and we change. And somehow, that particular strata of the world, or that behavior, those people in the world that used to drive us nuts, all of a sudden, we're not thinking about them, we're getting better. And it all stemmed from having a resentment, because you heard the truth, but instead of rejecting the truth, you did the adult thing, you followed the rules, you went through the thing, you said the prayer, and somehow you changed over a period of time. You know, it's messy, but it works. You know, so I want to talk about this. This is where it gets a little rough, and this is just my own point of view, you know, and so you're free to disagree. You can be wrong if you want to. You're free to disagree. It happens, and I'm going to tell you something. This has worked for me. This is what works for me. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. The women from the, this is the separations. You know, they say, we've experienced much of heaven and we've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. There's like a rocket going up, and you're either going to hit escape velocity and bust free of this alcoholism and this thinking and the worrying and the sucking your thumb and the feeling sorry for yourself. You're either going to get free of that loneliness. You're going to either get free of that, or you're going to, and you're going to, that second stage is going to burst out and keep on going, or you're going to fall back to earth. You may not drink. You'll just be one of these people at 25 years that are, you know, or, you know, are just saying, hanging in there. How you doing? I'm hanging in there. One day at a time, put the plug in the jug. That's all. You could be one of those. Hey, listen, you can have anything you want. You can belong to the not drinking club, you know what I mean? Or you can belong to something called the Fellowship of the Spirit. Which that's a different organization. It's within Alcoholics Anonymous. As a matter of fact, it's not only within Alcoholics Anonymous, it's all over the world. It's in churches, it's everywhere. It's called the Fellowship of the Spirit. It's kind of neat. If you think Alcoholics Anonymous is great, I'll tell you what's really great. When you find people in the Fellowship of the Spirit in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then you go outside and you find that there are other people in the Fellowship of the Spirit, and they're not even alcoholics, but they're in the fellowship of the same Spirit. And you know what happens? If you think it's cool to go to A rooms, where do you find that there are normal people that are not alcoholics that are also in the Fellowship of the Spirit? It like broadens your horizons. It's a pretty neat deal. It's hard to feel sorry when the gal in the checkout counter is also in the Fellowship of the Spirit. And the guy sitting next to you, the 10 items is less, is also in the Fellowship of the Spirit. When the cop that stops you, you find out you stopped on him, and he's in the Fellowship of the Spirit too. When the entire world is in the Fellowship of the Spirit, and you know about it because you talk their language, and they talk your language, and you recognize them, and they recognize you because they recognize the Spirit in you. And there's all these people out there that are not in the Fellowship of the Spirit, and don't even understand the Fellowship of the Spirit because it's foolishness to them. And you want to know something? Those people are in here too, and they get pissed off if we talk about the Fellowship of the Spirit. Even though it's in the book, and even though it's scriptural, even though it's all there, they don't want to hear it because they don't want to go there. And since we're all codependents and basically, you know, relationship whores, you know what I mean? What we do is, if somebody doesn't like it in Alcoholics Anonymous, we feel bad. We don't want to hurt their feelings. They don't want us talking about them behind our back, you know, or something like that, as if they're paying our Visa bills or something, that deal. So listen, I'm going to talk about the deal. I'm going to read you stuff from stuff. Listen, there are consequences to not doing this, and there are consequences to doing this. I sponsored a guy. You guys probably knew him, you know. He's dead now. God bless him. I loved him. He was one of the first guys I sponsored. He actually lived with us for a few months. His name is Kevin. And so one day, and Kevin would stay sober for a year, and then he drank. He'd stay sober for 3 years, and then he drank. He died sober. You know, he stayed sober. And one day I saw Kevin, he was sober for about a year, and every time Kevin drank, he got arrested. Every time Kevin drank, he got arrested. Immediately. He would drink and immediately get arrested. I mean, I think what happened is he would drink and an alarm would go off, a 911 call would happen, you know what I mean? He went from the sweetest guy in the world to a monster as soon as he drank. He was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. For him to drink was to go to jail. And so one day, but the point is, when he sobered up, he was the most personable, lovely, greatest guy. Everybody loved him when he got sober. So he was in a sober mode for about a year. He got sobered up, and he immediately got hired by IBM. Didn't matter that he had 16 felonies. You know, people, it didn't matter for you. Kevin could have 16 felonies, you know, a giraffe. It didn't matter. They were hiring him because he was such a great salesman. And I sponsored Kevin. I went up to Kevin one day at the call room, and I caught him coming out of the 12 o'clock meeting. I said, Kevin, how you doing? And he says he was expecting a big check, you know, money, you know, because he had made a big sale, you know, $10,000 check or something like that. And they had just told him that he wasn't going to get 10, he was going to get like 1,500 or whatever it was. And they're screwing me, you know, I can't believe, the sons of bitch, they're not going to get away with it, they don't know who they're screwing, I'm going to get, and I said to him, and I said, listen, Kevin, I don't know whether they're screwing you or not. I don't know whether they're right, I don't know whether they're wrong, it's entirely possible, but I know this, if you don't get rid of this resentment, you're going to be drunk by 5, and you're going to be arrested by 6. You're going to be in jail. He says, bullshit, let me tell you something. I'm going to show this and blah, 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 and this, that, and the other thing. And he got in his car, and at 6 o'clock that day, I got a call from the Dade County Jail. And he was there. He had got drunk by 5 and got arrested in Coconut Grove, and he was in jail by 6. And that is, ladies and gentlemen, 32 years of sobriety, a little over 32 years of sobriety, the fastest validation I've ever had in my life. That's the fastest report I can give you on God actually validating, you do this, and this is what's going to happen. But you and I both, there are consequences. There are spiritual and material consequences to disobedience, to sin, to not doing what they tell you to do. But the problem is, and you and I, we all know this, that the way God works is, it doesn't usually take 6 hours. Sometimes the consequences of doing this stuff take 16 years or 20 years. Sometimes it's 10 or 15 or 20 years down the road and 3 divorces later and your kids aren't talking to you and now you have cancer and you got 3 weeks to live or, you know, you haven't been able to stay sober. Sometimes the consequences don't show up until 20 years later. As a matter of fact, more often than not, the spiritual consequences of a disobedient life, of not surrendering, doesn't show up like in Kevin's case right away, where you just disobey, you decide to do it your way, and like an hour later, the archangel appears and bam, you hit over the head with a hammer. You know what I mean? It doesn't work that way. Sometimes not only you get away with it, you know, a lot of good things happen to you. You start thinking you're doing okay. You know, a lot of this stuff has to go by faith, not necessarily carrot or stick. You just have to accept, you either have to accept what's in this book by faith or not. And do it your way and rest on your laurels. You know, that's the deal. You're gonna learn the price of obedience, or you know, disobedience has a price. This is the, you know, they have a test for this step. You know what the test for this step is? This step, now listen to this, this is a biblical word, and this is the absolute truth. This step has to do with something called righteousness. Right standing, and believe me, I don't know anything about righteousness. I don't know anything about it. You don't have to know anything about that, right? You don't even have to be righteous. As a matter of fact, this works better on people like us, you know? But the bottom line is, this is a step about being right standing with God. You know how I know that? Because it says in the step, it even gives you the test. The test in the step, right? Well, I don't have I don't even have the 12 and 12 here, but I seem to remember the step. It says the test developed by, you ready for this? A well-loved clergyman. I know you've been told by the wisdom of the rooms that I'm not associated with any religion, that religion bad, AA good, earth people bad, all knowledge in AA. You know, listen, everything they got from clergymen. That's why they said a well-loved clergyman, because it was Ed Dowling or it was Sam Shoemaker who brought these things. You know, we owe a lot to clergymen. And here is the test. Anyone in six step, here's the test. Here's the difference. So you think it's drinking or not drinking. It's not drinking or not drinking. It's anyone, okay, who has, and you can look it up, it's in 12 and 12, repeatedly tried these steps. because they want to grow in the image and likeness of their Creator. Sounds a little biblically, little Bible type of thing, you know, a little biblical, because it is. Because it is. They weren't atheists. They believed in the Creator, not the doorknob. They were deists. They believed in a deity, not the sponge. They said, in the image and likeness of your Creator. Now, if you're in the image, if you look like a doorknob, I guess it could be a doorknob or a tree or something, you know. Image and likeness of your Creator. I know what they were talking about. I know what they were talking about. You know what they were talking about. You just don't want to hear it. Is it just because you don't know what they, just because you know what, just because you don't want to hear it doesn't mean it isn't true. Anyone with enough of this deal that they want it enough, where they want to grow in the image and likeness of their Creator as a man that can be called somebody who wants to do this repeatedly, who wants to grow in the image and likeness of their Creator. That's the test. Look it up in the 12 and 12. So here we go. Let's read something in. Let's read a couple of things. Let's start off with the surrender, okay, and work our way forward. Here we go. Page 71, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, this is what they were doing the first 4 years. You know, if we were in the first 4 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't even be necessary. We wouldn't even be having this discussion. You know why? Because you'd know it already. You'd be in Alcoholics Anonymous. You would have already gone on your knees. You would have been reading all the Bible. You've been doing all this stuff. And I wouldn't even be saying this because this would, you wanted some? We'd be talking about other stuff because this would be second nature. You would have said, well, why are we listening to this? We all know this. The only people that know this now is people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because nobody talks about it in Alcoholics Anonymous because they're scared somebody will hate them. Okay, here we go. But, you know, at around 25 years, I figured they can't fire me. You know, what are they going to do? According to Bill, page 71, according to Bill, Ann Smith had decided that This is what happens when you... Here it is. Page 101. Dr. Bob and Good Old Timers. Conference-approved literature. There's no such thing as conference-disapproved literature, but, you know, people will say that to you to shut you up. Like the Bible's, conference-disapproved. I can't wait for that vote to happen up there in New York, where they say the Bible's conference-disapproved. Don't worry, that vote ain't never going to happen. On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender, which I felt was a very important part. The surrender was more than important. It was a must. You get that? It was a must. That's what happened. You know what they say? Rarely haven't seen a person fail as slowly. Do what we did. You get what we got. He says, getting down on your knees was a must. Bobby, who came into AA in February 1937, recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you had indicated that you were serious, they told you to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting you were powerless over alcohol and that your life was unmanageable. Furthermore, you had to state that you believed in a higher power who would return you to sanity. So much for the I don't know whether I believe in God stuff. There you can see the beginning of the 12 steps. Well, I guess so. First three, at least. We called that, you ready for this? We called that the surrender. They demanded it. When was the last time you had a meeting on the surrender? We don't do that anymore. It's not important. Because we're not walking the path they walked. We're doing the easier, softer way. We'll all come in here and have group therapy and talk about, you know, how your mother kicked the cat or something like that. It's all psychological. It's all psychobabble now. Bunch of alkies walking around sucking their thumb, talking about their feelings. We called that the surrender. They demanded it. You couldn't go to a meeting until you did it. If by accident you didn't make it in the hospital, you had to make it in the upstairs bedroom over the Williamson's house. Dorothy S.M. recalled the 1937 meetings when the men would all disappear upstairs and all of us women would be nervous and worried about what was going on. After about a half an hour or so, down would come the new man, shaking, white, serious, and grim. And all the people, because he was humiliated in a sense, he was humbled. You know who he was? He was an alcoholic, a humbled alcoholic. And all the people who were already in AA would come trooping down after him. They were pretty reluctant to talk about what had happened, But after a while, they would tell us they had had a real surrender. I often wonder how many people that come in now, and this was written like 30 years ago, now would survive an experience like that, a regular old-fashioned prayer meeting, said Dorothy, who was then married to AA member Clarence Snyder. I was AA. I was AA in the 1935 through 1939. I was AA for 10 years after that. That was their path. If you're saying, well, that's not the way we do it now, it's because that's not the way we do it now. Now, let me tell you something. Here's the bottom line. If you don't think there are consequences to watering this thing down in what happens to you, you may get the not drinking thing for a while. But if you think somehow you know what they say? What do they say? The great fact is this and nothing less. Isn't that what they say?
Yeah.
You have a book, and this is what they say. Here's what it says. It says, here it is. It says, we have found much of heaven, and we've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, right? And then it says, the great fact is this and nothing less. This was written by those people that were doing that thing, getting guys on their knees, doing all the stuff I just said, demanding the surrender. These guys who were doing that, this is Dr. Bob. This is the guy that said in his story, if you're an atheist, you think I'm tough? You think, oh, if I was only sponsored by Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson. I'm not asking you yet. They'd have you down on your knees. The bottom line is, this is the guy who said, if you're an atheist, agnostic, or have some other form of intellectual pride that keeps you from doing this, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly father will never let you down. These guys didn't have a lot of tolerance for people who didn't want to do this stuff. They weren't ready. They said, we don't argue with them. Let them go out and drink until they're ready, and they come in with a whole new attitude. We're not going to change AA for them. They're going to have to change and come into the way, to our way of thinking. It says right here, the great fact is this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Listen, the central fact of our lives today, what do you think the central fact of their lives was? You think it was about, you know, sex or relationships or husbands or wives or problems? You know, of course, we're problem people. We had all, but the central fact of their lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do by ourselves. And even at the end of the promises that read, it says, we learn that He is doing for us what we can to do for ourselves. Listen, if you understand what they were doing the first 4 years, with the getting on your knees, with the whole thing, giving your life, what would you expect them to say other than that? What would you expect their attitude to be other than that? Later on it says this. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust the infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. You know, if you can match calamity with serenity, stuff going on in your life, you know, what did he say? In this world you will have problems, but be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. If you can overcome the world and its problems and your circumstances, if you could be in a situation where I've learned to be content, as the Apostle Paul said, I've learned to be content in all things. I've been rich, I've been poor, I've been in jail, out of jail, it don't matter to me. I'm okay no matter what. It says, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. You know how rampant fear is in Alcoholics Anonymous? Go to your discussion meetings. It's all fear, 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 fear. When your sponsee calls you up, fear. Everything in here is about fear. You know what solves fear? Faith. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, how do you get faith? You surrender. How do you surrender? You get down on your knees. You pick up the white chip. You listen. You follow. You obey. You do things you don't want. You know something? You're not getting enough. You know, here's, how about this? Bill Dodson. Now, you come to the AA. You've been around AA for a while. And one of the things you notice, here's Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, the guy in the bed. Remember the raunch, anybody ever seen the skinny guy in the bed? They show Bill Wilson and Dr. Barr standing there. Bill Wilson has opened the Bible. That's what he has. He doesn't have the big book. He has the Bible. And the guy sitting there is a guy named Bill Dodson. Okay? And they're reading the Bible to him and they're talking to him. Okay? And this is what Bill Dodson said. Now, you come to, I don't know about you, but I came to AA, a blithering idiot, you know, not much different than I am now, you know. And I'm sitting there, and after my brain cleared up, and after I got past the initial obsession, and after I got into the point where I wasn't drinking, and I was 2 or 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years sober, in other words, sober enough so they felt okay, I wasn't going to drink, but I realized, you got to the point where you know you're not drinking, but you also realize you're crazy. You understand what I'm saying? You know, well, sure, you know what I'm talking about. Because you're alcoholics and you're here, you know? So you understand. You're not worrying about drinking, but you might blow your brains out just by accident. You know, one day you have a bad minute and you take a gun and you kill yourself, you know? And it's just, you know, it's just like a temporary solution, a permanent solution to a temporary problem, you know? Because it's just because they're just driving you crazy, you know? So here's it. So because you know why? The wrong deeds of others, fancy to real, imagine to real, have the power to kill. They kill you. It just goes you crazy. You start thinking, what do you think about? What an idiot you are. You ought to die. You're never going to get this thing. You might as well. All sorts of bad stuff, you know, because you're crazy, because that's it, because you're an alcoholic, because your real disease sends your mind. So how are you going to get a, you can stop the drinking. How are you going to stop the thinking? How are you going to stop that deal? You know, how are you going to be rocketing in the fourth dimension of existence and experience much of heaven when you're thinking about you're a piece of crap and you ought to kill yourself? How's that going to work out for you? How are you going to stop those things? You know, what are you going to do? You're going to come here and listen to other people who are going to talk about how they feel that way and all that crap, you know, and just hang in there one more day. Is that the deal, what you're going to do? Hang around those guys? But here's what happens. Here's what the deal is. You go to a meeting like I went to the old keynote group. You're there for 3 months, 4 months. I mean, you're 4 months sober. You walk in a meeting. Some guy does the meeting. He's got like 30 years, 35 years, 20, you know, whatever it is. You're watching him. The guy is like... He's like transparent. He's like authentic. He's like, I don't know, there's just some, you know, like, you know, it's like the old golf game I say. I play golf and Tiger Woods play golf. We're playing a different game. I'm in AA, he's in AA, we're playing a different deal. This guy at a different level. You know, I don't know what's going on, but I'm a whack job. I know he's not a whack job. Or if he's a whack job, he's a whack job at a different level, you know? I don't understand him. I just know when I'm around him, I feel good. And all of a sudden you just start noticing. Not everybody in AA, but every once in a while you run into somebody in AA and they start talking, and every time they talk, they make sense. My life is a jumble. I don't understand anything. I went to law school, National Science Foundation fellow. I'm like brilliant. My life is a jumble. I don't understand anything. I sit next to this guy. He hangs wallpaper, for God's sakes. And I throw up on him all this stuff. And he looks at me and he says three words. And all of a sudden, my life makes total sense. And I'm walking away, I say, unbelievable. You run into a Bud Dunbar, you know what I mean? Who guy doctors would drive down from, you know, like Key West, drive up from Key West to talk to this guy, just to get a few words with this guy. One day, Joe said to me, he says, you know what Bud does for a living? I said, he must be like a college professor. You know, he says he parks cars at the Eden Rock. You run into these guys, and they got something, and you don't know what they got, and they're just guys, they got 30 years, and they found the secret. They're the men. They're in the fellowship of the Spirit. The fellowship of the Spirit is populated in the sixth step. When the men are separated from the boys, the men go in the fellowship of the Spirit. The boys go into the not drinking club. Well, I haven't had a drink, but that's what they go into. So you start realizing that there's something going on here. There's people that have something that you don't have. That's why you go to meetings. That's why you go to these step meetings. So because maybe you'll hear something. Maybe you sit close to me. Some little sort of, maybe it's like a virus or something. You'll catch it. I don't know. So it says here on page 191. You know, I read this stuff. I say, man, this is exactly what I thought. Page one. This was written like in the 30s, whatever it is, 40s. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has. This is the guy in the bed. Has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted others to go along with it. I noticed that others, this is Bill Dodson, the guy in the bed, talking about Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. He says, I noticed that others seem to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember, so he knew. He could see, he was sober, But he knew there was something more. He says, I knew there was, he says, and I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my life and said to her, this is what Bill Wilson said, Henrietta, the Lord, he wasn't talking about the doorknob, I mean, it's right here. He says, the Lord has been so one, this is Bill Wilson's experience. Doesn't have to be your experience, you can do whatever you want. It's your life. The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. You know what's the common denominator here? What's the centerpiece of their lives? God. What's this whole thing about God? What is the sixth step about? The man who repeatedly tries this on all his faults so he can grow in the image and likeness of his creator. What did I just read? Perhaps our life is on a new basis. The trusting of God. We never argue about God. You know, all men of faith have courage. What is this all about? It's all about God, a relationship with God. It's about courage. Okay? We read, and it says, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, cure me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it, telling other people. I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it, and he's so grateful about it that he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text of the AA and for me. And every person you read about in this book, whether you read the story, he sold himself short, and everything, at the very end of his, he sold himself short. What does the guy say? Is the last thing he says, and he sold himself short. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have found a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. And you read all that, and these guys were doing this. They were part of the fellowship of the Spirit. They were on fire for God. Yeah. They weren't working the steps. They were working the steps, but the steps came natural to them because they were on fire. They were focused on God. They're on fire for God. They were reading the Bible. They were going to Bible studies. They were joining churches because they were because God would show them how to create the fellowship they crave. What other fellowship would they have except the fellowship of people that believe in God? I don't know whether you know this, but in the big book, they encourage church membership. Is that what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous today? You know, my mother, God bless her, started a free thinkers group. It's a group for atheists. Atheists are allowed in AA. It's fine. But it's all, do you think, but is atheism something that AA is about? You know, we have a thing called Chapter of the Agnostic. You know, it talks to atheists and agnostics. You know what it says? It doesn't encourage atheism. It says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. But we're so, hey, if you want the white chip, you can sneak up later on. We are so worried about hurting somebody's feelings that we will condemn them to death. You understand? And to a horrible life rather than hurt their feelings because we want to be tolerant. You know, now I understand that I'm going to ruffle some feathers. Listen, you know something? If it bothers you, you need to look into that. I just gave you a spiritual MRI because whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the problem is, something wrong with you, it doesn't bother me at all. I'm fine, you know, I'm fine with it because I read the book because I know what's going on. I don't want to walk out with blood on my hands. You know, I don't want to give you the watered-down chemotherapy. You know, I want to tell you the truth. You don't have to go with it. You know, you can wait till you're 80 years old or 90 years old and say, I did this AA thing for 40, 50 years. I didn't drink, but I feel like crap and my life is miserable. Maybe I should have listened to that guy. I don't know. You do whatever you want to do. It's your life. It's your life. I'm not telling you what to do. You read the material. You read Dr. Bob in the good old times. You read this book and you watch the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, the ones that seem to have what you want, and you find out where their heads are at. And then you watch the people that have the problems, that are talking about other people behind their back, you know, that are bitching and moaning. You're always putting people down, you know, who their minds are always, there's always something wrong, or they're criticizing people, or they're upset about something, or they're upset about, you look those, you see what they're about. You see what they're focused on. And then here's what you get to do, because it's your life. The only thing you have in possession of is your life. You then get to decide, well, I'd rather be like this guy, I'd rather be like that guy. I want this kind of sobriety, or I want that kind of sobriety. But if you opt for the kind of sobriety where it's just not don't drink and go to meetings, and that's it, if that's what you opt for, then when you have 10 years or 15 years and your life is going down the tubes and you're still confused and you're still acting and feeling with the voices and all that stuff telling you you're a piece of crap and all that stuff, even at 5 years or 10 years and you haven't, don't blame anybody but yourself, because you're the one who made the choice. You're the one who chose the sponsor that you chose, or not having a sponsor. You're the one who chose either to go to church or not go to church. You're the one who chose to actually follow some of the things in the big book, but not all the things in the big book. You know why? Because you weren't willing to make the full surrender. You were willing to surrender only this far and no more, because you didn't want to surrender anymore because you're worried about whether people were going to laugh at you. And most of the people in AA, listen to me, will laugh at you. Trust me, most of the people in AA, if you start talking about God or church or going back there or reading the Bible, most of the people will snicker or laugh at you. So you got to decide whether you want what they have or you want something else. And if you want something else, you'll probably be along with those guys in the Fellowship of the Spirit, because many are called and few are chosen. You know, it's a narrow road, right? It's a narrow road. And few find it. The other one's going the broad highway. But we all meet in the same rooms. You just get to choose. Okay, God bless you. That's it for Six Step.
Great. Okay.
You're welcome. Okay, now, is there a...